My name is Brian Auger, and I've been involved in libraries since the very early, well, actually since the 70s, but that really doesn't count. But my first job was in the early 80s. I spent about 27 years in Central Maryland, and I'm now honored to be in the Garden State, New Jersey. I pretend to run, and they pretend to let me pretend I'm running, a 10-branch system in Central New Jersey, a little bit north of Princeton. Most people kind of know where that is. And we're doing some fun things with Linux and open source software, or at least we're beginning to do some fun things with it. And I know in Maryland there's a lot going on there as well, which is why we have a panelist from Maryland. So to my left is...
Hi, I'm Angela Breed. I'm from Howard County Library System, Chief Operating Officer. I'm responsible for the 6 branches that we have, hopefully soon to be 7. As I said earlier, I used to be a cheerleader, so volume is never a problem for me, usually. But I promise I won't break out the pom-poms. But we're at Howard County Library System. We are pleased to have a very strong Linux environment, and we're doing a lot of neat things, which I'll talk to you a little bit about when we come to my portion of it. And for those of you who put your hands down for New Orleans, I already love you. My family's from New Orleans, so I can tell you this is hotter than New Orleans, so, at least to me. But anyway, so welcome, and thank you for taking time to come out.
And on my left is Michael Pardee.
Hi, I'm Mike Pardee, the founder and president of OpenSense Solutions, and I created Groovix, which is a Linux public access computing system. I started out in computer chip design and worked for IBM and Intel, and about 10 years ago, I saw huge potential for Linux on the desktop, and it turned out libraries are a perfect environment for desktop Linux. So using open source software, I created all the functionality that libraries need for public computing.
And then one more little humorous note before we start. An old friend of mine, there's a joke that I've shared with her, which I will not share with you, because it's NSFW, and it has to do with a penguin. And when she heard the title of our talk, she was really afraid that we were going to show the YouTube video. So if you're at all curious about it, again, it's NSFW, but it is a hoot. Go to YouTube and look for penguin joke, and you'll be glad you did. So I'd like to try to frame the issue a little bit about why Linux in the library. I mentioned to you that I've been around for a while, and when I started in libraries, PCs were unusual things to see anywhere in a library. Occasionally, in the early 80s where I was, there might be a PC or two in the back that folks were using, but it was really not a frequent sight. But since that time, PCs, as you know, have they're everywhere in a library. What staff person doesn't expect to have a PC on his or her desk? How many staff workrooms don't have PCs, banks of them, to check in materials? And of course, the public want to come in and use PCs. And it really doesn't matter if you're in an environment that is fairly well-to-do, where you're pretty sure that pretty much everybody at home has PCs and even has broadband. They're still very much in demand. And I know that was the case when I was in Maryland, and it's certainly the case in New Jersey. And there are also a lot of people for whom that is maybe their only access to email and internet content. But libraries have really embraced PCs, and we've invested very heavily in them over the years. And what makes the PC so great is that it is a flexible machine. It's a machine that can do a variety of tasks depending on how you set it up and how you prepare it. So we use them for catalog purposes. Remember the old card catalog and how long it took? Has anybody been asked recently, why don't you have a card catalog? Yeah. You try to explain to them how expensive they are and they just don't believe you. But we use them for catalog, we use them for checking in and checking out, we use them for public internet access, we use them for public applications access. People want to do word processing and spreadsheeting, they want to scan photographs and whatnot. So we've created a variety of opportunities with PCs in libraries for people to use. So the question that I have for you is what really, when you've got an investment in PCs, what's the best way to get a return, a high return on that investment? There are a number of ways that you can do that. If you can get out of the cycle of replacing your PC fleet every 4 years, you know, so if you're replacing your heavily used PCs on a four-year basis, that means that if you've got, 500 PCs and you're replacing 20% of them every year just because, that's a lot of money to invest in replacing PCs that are perfectly workable. I would suggest to you that Microsoft Windows and full PCs to address all the tasks that we give PCs in a library is probably overkill. It's probably like using a bulldozer to use your gardening or to do your gardening. And you really don't need, sometimes you don't need all that horsepower. So I'd like to talk about PCs and one size fits all. One of the things that we're doing in Somerset County is using a remarkable $35 PC, and some lucky winner who endures the whole program will win one of these. It's a display sign in a box. It's built around a Raspberry Pi PC. Raspberry Pi PC is a little $35 erector set for the 21st century, and you can do an astonishing number of things with a Raspberry Pi as the basis. And what this does, complete with instructions, is to tell you how to make a digital sign, and it can be any size monitor you have, either lying around or buying, if you want to buy a 73-inch monitor, and you want to display a rolling sign about your programs or activities that are coming up in the library. Yeah, you can spend $1,000 on one of those setups, or you can bring your own monitor and a $35 Raspberry Pi, and using some open source software, you've got a terrific signboard that can be changed from anywhere on the internet. So within 20 minutes, your new slides that you've put in are taken out. So do you need a PC to do this? No. You can do it with a $35 PC. Before I start talking about open source, I just want to give you the number 40 million. 40 million is the number of lines of code in Microsoft Windows. 40 million. And you don't need that to run a sign. So, open source. Open source is flexible, it's scalable, it's thrifty, it's stable. It's all of those things. Stable, you turn it on, it goes, it'll go for years unless it has a power outage. We have many servers that are running Linux that don't even have a monitor or keyboard. They just run. Power goes down, power comes back up, they boot up, and they just run. You're not constantly installing patches and bug fixes and all of that other stuff. It just runs. What do I mean by thrifty? You can run a very fast machine, or you can run a very fast service for the public on a machine that, frankly, should be in the landfill if you were running Windows on it. And that's exactly what we've done in Somerset County. We had some machines that were still running Windows XP. Did we have any that were running Windows 98, Rich? Yeah, Windows 98. Remember that? These are PCs that, oh my goodness, they were really dogs and slow, and they're running antivirus software, and they're doing all this stuff, and people are coming up and they're frustrated with them. We took that very same fleet of PCs and used Michael's software, and it's like a breath of fresh air. They run like they're brand new. And so we've recovered that investment that we made in those PCs. You can also use a Raspberry Pi to build a catalog-only workstation. So those of you who have those in the library, we do. They're very popular. People want to come in, look up a book, and then go fetch it. And you don't want people parked there browsing on the internet. Well, why would you devote an entire PC to an activity like that if a $35 Raspberry Pi can do it just as well? And we've replaced dozens at this point. And for every one of those old PCs that was just running a catalog, it just runs on a Raspberry Pi, and the MIS department from the county never has to touch it because it just runs. Scalable, I think it speaks for itself. It can be anything from a Raspberry Pi all the way up to a high-end workstation. Very flexible, and that's because it's open. And that's the pun in this slide. Above all, it's open. People can take it apart. They can see the code. They can do whatever they want to it to make it into something that they want to do. So the only limit is your imagination. So the other part of open source software is the fact that it's often called free software. And some library folks think that open source software is the thing to use because it's free. And there's an old joke in the field that it's not free as in a free beer, it's free as in a free puppy. And if you want to get the most out of that puppy, you're going to have to invest some time and some energy into making that puppy your pet. So it does involve, and it can be just as expensive to run open source software as software that you have to buy a license for. But on the other hand, if your public are demanding lots of access to word processing and spreadsheeting, you don't have to buy a Windows license to do that, or you don't have to buy a Microsoft Office license to do that. There are lots of alternatives out there. And I just wanted to show you an example in that previous slide of some of the ways that Linux is in use throughout the world. At the moment, there are some 1 billion Android installations in the world. So Linux may not have taken over the computer desktop, but it's certainly taken over e-readers, navigation devices, refrigerators, smartphones. It's just everywhere. So one of the myths about open source software is that you're on your own and there's no support. Nothing could be further from the truth. I don't know how long you've spent talking on a support line with paid support, but I'm here to tell you that I have yet to find a problem. And by the way, I started using Linux in 05. So that was Hoary Hedgehog, I think, was the Ubuntu release at that time. And I have yet to find a single problem that I came across that I could not find an answer with Google within 5 or 10 minutes. Help is out there. There's a community of people who are passionate about using it and passionate about sharing solutions with you. So help is available. You can also get help with many open source software packages by paying for it. And Michael's company is an example of that, where the software is free, but the support has a cost to it. So it really is a myth that you're on your own. I can't believe that. I'm so sorry. That's my son. My son is traveling from Connecticut, where he visited his girlfriend, back down to Maryland, and apparently he's lost on 95. But he's going to have to make that Linux-driven GPS work for him. So this is one of the other myths about Linux and open source is that it looks like this. And it can look like that. And you know what? Windows can look like that, and so can OS X. But it doesn't have to look like that, and you can run it for years without ever seeing a screen that looks like that. It really can look just like that. And if your customers come up or your staff come up to see a desktop like that and they're not sure what to do next, that's because you need to show them how to use a mouse. Yeah, Luke's missed call. Oops. So the other part about open source software is that it's not compatible, it's not portable, and that is a myth. I've been using exclusively OpenOffice, LibreOffice for the last, well, since 05, so we'll call it 9 years. And I've yet to receive a document from somebody that I wasn't able to successfully open, read, edit, send back to them in a format that they could use. I've never had a compatibility problem. And there are lots of options. Many of them are in the cloud. Many of them can be client software. And notice I've even got Microsoft Office up there because we had a lot of folks coming into Somerset County who felt very passionately about why they needed to have access to Microsoft Office on our Linux machines. And we were able to provide them with a link to do it online. So, again, ask yourself the question, why do I have a fleet of PCs? And as you think about the PCs that you have in your office or in your library, there are a number of them that are doing sets of tasks. And maybe some of those tasks don't need to be done by a full-fledged PC. Maybe there's something you could do a little more cost-effectively. So, mostly in libraries, people are looking to look up information about your resources. They're looking for content access. They're looking at electronic databases that we provide access to. They're looking for, and this is an old term, but I don't know what else to call it, office automation. They want to work on a resume. They want to print their book report. They want to whatever with an Excel spreadsheet. They're taking care of their homeowners association billing list. Or they want to do a digitization project. There might be some other things that people are coming into the library to do, but that I think pretty much describes what most people are doing. Well, I already mentioned to you that you can use otherwise obsolete equipment if you outfit it with Linux, and you can do that on your own or you can do that with a company like Michael's. I mentioned to you as well that you can do many of those projects with a machine that's better suited to the task at hand. I'll give you a really easy example. In Somerset County, we started using Chromebooks. They use Linux at the base. I wouldn't call it open source. It's proprietary with Google. But for a $150 Chromebook that you can check out to someone in the library to use in the library, the battery on it lasts for 8 hours, so they're not likely to wear out the battery. They can use it anywhere in the library, not at a dedicated piece of furniture. People are really happy to use them. You can set them up in such a way that if somebody decides to take it home with them, it won't work. It'll only work if it's tied to that particular IP address in your library. Lots of safeguards. We've never lost a one. Yes, we had one break. But think about the cost of providing a traditional workstation in a public library. Think about the furniture, the dedicated furniture that it usually sits on. Think about the fact that you need to have an Ethernet drop, you need to have power there, and it gets very costly. Then you've got the PC itself, the box, and all that other stuff that somebody has to maintain and support. And now all of a sudden, it's looking like a real deal to have a $150 Chromebook that you can hand to somebody to use in the library. Is everybody going to be happy using a Chromebook? Probably not. But most people are delighted to be able to sit anywhere they'd like in the library with access to the internet and your resources. So we found them to be very successful. So do the math. I'm thinking it costs closer to $1,000 to outfit a traditional workstation in a public library when you take into consideration all of the costs, the furniture and whatnot. And it costs $150 to lend a Chromebook. So it's really better suited to the purpose. The last piece I'll say about it is slashing your need for support. I already told you about the Raspberry Pi catalog-only workstations that we have that just run. Every now and then they stop running. Why? Because somebody unplugged them. You know? That's the basic reason why they stop working. We get virtually no support calls for our Groovix installations throughout the system. And again, we've got 10 branches. We've probably got about 300 PCs out there that the public are using. They just work. They come on every morning. If they had a software update, it already came in. They work all day, and they turn off at night when they're supposed to. And the benefit that this gives us by not needing the county's MIS department to constantly come and install flash updates, to redo the antivirus software, to fix the viruses that got on there anyway, the time that they save is just enormous. I've been running, as I said, Linux since 2005, and I don't have antivirus software. I never have. I've never picked up anything from the internet. That concludes my portion. And again, if you can bear to listen to us all day, or at least for the session, we do have this great prize at the end and some really neat giveaways. I'd like to turn the floor over to Angela.
Thank you, Brian. Well, we've been using, here at Howard County Library System, we moved over to a Linux environment, began initially in 1995 was when we really kind of kicked it off, and that was because we were going from a Windows NT to a Windows 95 environment. The maintenance and the change in terms of the cost of upgrading and trying to change over created a great I guess, a headache for the staff that was there at the time. They then began looking at the Linux Foundation and what they would do, and in 2004, we began with the Groovix. Now, what Groovix has, what's allowed us to do is that it's allowed us to have a stable environment that's less expensive for our public computers. And we wanted to focus in on our public computers because at that time about one-third of our customers were using the PCs for public use, I mean for personal home business. One-third were using it for an office suite, sort of like Word, Excel, word processing alternative, and another one-third were seeking information. That breakout of how our customers use our computers is altered ever so slightly. The slightly part really begins with what we all know today in the world is that when people want to use the computers, the public access, customers want to use it also to play games, and they also want to use it to try to find out about videos or watch videos. So the methodology behind why we moved is that every public computer should be able to have more access to different software without the upgrade and the cost. So for us, we've used it on our public access computers. We have about 388 of them, and that's about 48% of our fleet. We also have it on some of our staff workstations, and that accounts for about 27% of our computing fleet. The PAC computers, which we call them, the PAC computers, are where our customers can use it for Word, for Excel, for those type, but they use it under the LibreOffice, and so the capabilities are still the same. Additionally, they're able to use those computers to play games. There are a lot of open source games that are free. And we have if we have a young person, a youth come in, and while we'd like them all to be doing research, the reality is that some people do just come and play games. And then we also enable our customers to see our catalog. They can go through our web interface on the desktop that they have, and they can actually search our catalog. We have Polaris as our library, our catalog. But Polaris has what's called a power pack, and it allows our customers still to see see the documents or the books they would like to check out. They can reserve things. They can register for classes. They can do all the things they would do on a Windows computer, but they actually can do it using the Groovix interface. Our staff workstations, the 27% of our fleet that are staff workstations, those workstations are being used right now to check in materials. They can use it to check out materials, and so it allows us, again, to have some additional functionality that you would have in a typical Windows environment, but it allows us to do it at a much cheaper rate and allows us to keep the speed that we currently have. This is actually what Groovix window, when our customers sit down, they can click and they can find. For those of you who are familiar with Windows, a Microsoft Windows environment, this is pretty much similar, but I actually like it a lot better for our customers because they can see the titles, but they can see all of the different LibreOffice options that we have for them. Some of the terminology is a little different, so some of our staff get questions, you know, what is Impress or what is, if I do this in Microsoft Word how do I do this on this machine? Once we open it, they are able to find the same functionality. They are able to do some very similar activities on it. So we haven't had a lot of problems from our customers regarding this interface. The benefit to us was cost and stability and flexibility. I'll start with cost. There's a chart there that shows you a little bit of what the cost would be. And what we find is I just took a number that says these are what our typical PAC machines would cost. It's around $400. And if we do a fleet of 300 and we were walking out the door, we'd have to spend about $206 on a Windows to outfit our library system for the PAC machines currently. That is a base cost. From there, you have upgrades, and from there, you have software. The software, if we were to outfit with a Microsoft Office package, would add about another $155,000. So before you even get to next year's upgrades and before you get to maintenance, you're at approximately about $355,000. That's a pretty major investment for the PAC machines, the public access machines. And so in this case, our Groovix that we use enable us, and as Brian has mentioned, they're very flexible, they're very cost effective, and they allow us to offer more to our customers without spending that additional cost. The it also allows us to use older machines. Currently, our machines that we have about 47% that are less than 2 years old. That's because we have been doing a lot of building out. Our footprint has grown at Howard County Library System. We have the new Miller branch. We also have the new Savage or the renovated Savage branch, and soon to have the Elkridge branch. So our footprint for what we're offering has expanded out, and with that, we've bought new machines. We still have about 43% that are between 3 and 7 years old, which allows us to continue to use those machines, and there's a small 16% that are older than 8 years old. Stability, we haven't had any trouble with our PAC machines. We've not had any viruses, any major issues. I think Mike, he actually supports some of our systems, so he'll talk about a few of the drawbacks that he's seen from his side. But in terms of our customers and what we have, we have not had any complications. What open source, I will say for this, we have a STEM initiative at our branch, and what the open source environment has allowed us to do for that environment is to offer a 3D software, which we use to teach our students Blender. So if you have any STEM classes and you know about all the other 3D software that are available out there, we now are able to teach students, and we've taught about 155 of them on how to use Blender, and that allows us to render in 3D and print on a 3D printer, so it's pretty cool. This is also our window, our flexibility from the PAC machines. We do have some flexibility. This is showing you our catalog in the middle screen, where it looks very similar to what you would see on any other environment. It allows them to see the collection. They can make selections. On the right-hand side, the flexibility is that we actually have people verifying if they actually want to print. Now, that was something that was a little new. Before, people could just come in and print. But what we found is a lot of people, and I know I've been one of those people, you ever print the wrong item, and you're like, oh, I didn't mean to print that. We actually were able to add a feature where we can ask someone, are you sure you want to print? For those of you who use maybe something like a Kinko's or something, they do a software, a print verification as well. So we're able to do that. We don't track their printing and what they do with it. That's not our focus. But in terms of making sure our customers are pleased, we offer this feature, and it seems so our customers do like it. Our focus in all of our packaging and what we do for our computer fleet is based on this customer. What can we do to make their experience better, easier, and exceed their expectations? We don't just want to meet them. We'd like to exceed them. So this was one thing, although it looks pretty small, is something that they were like, thank you, because now we're not printing the wrong page, or if you get ready to print something from a website and it's 55 pages long and they go in, they try to stop. So this allows them to see some of that. What we also were able to do is with the GrooveX, is Mike's company was able to help us change our GrooveX image so that when we get ready to have our summer reading initiatives, we can actually see all of the initiatives. We can let a customer come in and they can see, for instance, that the summer reading club is going to start on this date, and then there's a new version of something coming out. We can let our customers know through their screenshots. What allows us also to do is Mike comes in and they actually update all of our images. So the benefit is where before our staff would have to go in and update 10 machines or 5 machines by hand, we push it out system-wide, 388 computers, get an image update. Another thing that happens is they do real-time updates on Firefox and other software packages, I mean other browsers, so that we don't have to go in and keep touching those machines. So we've had a great opportunity with it. Our 10 years perspective, as I mentioned, we're very pleased with it. But as we look forward to what are we doing with the Howard County Library System fleet, our computer fleet that are for the public are Linux and will stay GrooveX. Our public fleet will be offered. We're putting more and more computers or access through laptops and tablets in our system. That will happen using the GrooveX experience for our customers. For our staff, again, those who are working with our catalog system and working with our library information system, they will be using the Linux-based workstations that we have. One new thing that I do want to point out we're very excited about in our renovated Savage branch is we are moving towards touch screens. So the touch screen that we are using is allowing customers to come and check the catalog, and it's meant for short interactions, but they're going to be able to walk up and do a touch screen and access. And so that's something that originally our GrooveX did not do, but now we'll be able to do, as offer more touchability and moving forward with the new technologies that are available out there. The other piece that's coming on beyond is that as we at Howard County Library System, we're focused on education for all. And so with our public education for all, as I mentioned, is our STEM Learning Center, and we are teaching the 3D using open source. We are also teaching C++ and other programming languages, but we're using a three-platform environment, which allows the youth to understand, get their arms wrapped around open source environments. We, of course, do Windows because that is what's available to them in their school system, and Macintosh systems as well. But our focus really on teaching them some of the tools they can use are open source because they can use it at home. So if you look in terms of how you're educating students or educating your customers, you would like to give them something that they not just learn in your branch, but also something they can use at home. So we are simply delighted to be able to have this advantage of the Groovex. And with that, I guess that's probably a very good segue to Mike Pardee.
But before we segue to Mike, I want to add one more thing. And I'm going to put you on the spot, Angela. Your budget is about what?
For IT?
For the whole library.
Oh, for the whole library, it's about $70,000 for our IT.
So the point that I'm really trying to make here is you don't need a huge IT staff. How many people do you have on your IT staff?
We have nine.
Who actually support PCs?
We have nine people on our staff, and of the nine, we go for a very integrated approach. When we hire our IT staff, we hire people who understand Linux, Windows, and Mac, and to your point, we have all of the nine, seven now understand, and we do that in part of our interview process. So you don't need a big staff. To your point, you don't need the $70,000. You do need to make sure that you have someone who really understands Linux and someone who will seek out the software packages and to understand the dynamics. Our architecture of how we've set it up is critically important because it's not in our whole computer fleet. There are other computers that are Windows-based. There are other computers that are Macintosh. And so we try to make sure that we have an architecture that allows us to grow so that 70,000 can go as far as it has to go. And of the 70,000, very little has to be spent on our PAC machines. The bit that is spent on it is spent because we are upgrading and making changes, hopefully to enhance.
And I'll just add that Somerset County Library, 10 branches, and I want to say for people who actually, on the staff, who actually take care of PCs and workstations, we're talking about four, and develop stuff, we're talking about four people. You don't need a huge staff. So you can do it on a very, very modest budget. With that, I'll give it to Michael.
All right. So my company is OpenSense Solutions. Groovex is our main product for public computing. And I want to talk a little bit more about open source, the movement, as Brian started talking about. But first, I'd like to know a little bit about the audience so I know how technical I should get. Can I see by a show of hands how many of you are IT people? Okay, good portion. Okay, and how many are already using Linux on some of your public computers? Okay, and how many are using open source software in some form, like Firefox? Okay, pretty much everyone. So I'm a big believer in the ideology of open source software. All of the code that OpenSense Solutions produces is GPL licensed, which means anyone can use it, modify it, and incorporate it into their own software. However, even if you don't buy into the open source ideology, open source software is very practical. Unless you're a huge established business, it's very expensive and time-consuming to write software from scratch. And that translates into lower cost. But there are two other major benefits to open source software that I want to talk about: automation and customization. Now, even if you're using Linux, as you start running closed source software on top of it, you start to lose those advantages of automation and customization. So, for example, Google Chrome is not open source software. We can't automate it and customize it nearly as much as open source browsers like Firefox or Chromium, which is the open source kind of version of Chrome. So on the graphic you see here, OpenSense Solutions and Groovix are kind of on the edge of the open source circle because even though everything we produce is open source, we take a pragmatic approach and include non-open components like Chrome, Java, and some proprietary hardware drivers when necessary. You can also see some of the Microsoft products are so far from open source, I couldn't even move them far enough away and keep them on the slide. But we will still work with them. Microsoft Office, as Brian mentioned, you can access in the cloud these days. But if you really want to run Microsoft Office, we can run it on the Linux desktop through Wine. However, after a library sees what LibreOffice can do, they don't want to pay for the Microsoft Office licenses anymore. So, there are several reasons that open source software is easier to automate. With closed systems, you have to deal with license acceptance and piracy prevention measures. Whereas open source systems have completely automated application installation systems. You just give it a list of what applications you want installed, it installs them, it keeps them updated. Open source systems can also manage conflicts between apps. If the source is closed, you never know what kind of conflicts are going to arise because every app's behavior is secret. Closed source software also doesn't usually have good data exporting functions because they don't want you to switch to someone else's software. On the other hand, open source software is usually built on open standards, which makes it easy to interface to and extend. So, for instance, LibreOffice can open a much wider range of formats and save to that same range of formats than Microsoft Office. So, what's the practical benefit of all the automation? Here are some examples. The Lake County Library System in Indiana said that it used to take them 3 hours to get a machine reinstalled from scratch when they used Windows. Now with Groovix, it takes 5 minutes. You start the installer, come back in an hour, and it's done. On a fast machine, it's more like 20 minutes. And after using Groovix for 3 years, they counted up the number of work orders in their system and compared it to the 3 years prior to that when they were using Windows with EnvisionWare. And the number of work orders was cut in half with Groovix. Here's another example. The picture here is the area covered by the North Central Regional Library System in Washington State. They have over 200 public computers spread across 29 branches. Some are several hours away, and sometimes going to a branch is not even feasible if it's snowing. And their staff is actually very experienced with Linux, and they used to use a public computing software called Userful, which is Linux-based but not open source. But with Userful, they weren't allowed to have the root password, so they couldn't automate things themselves and write their own scripts. Now with Groovix, they can easily automate all of their tasks. And we recently did a major Groovix version upgrade for them completely remotely, which would be like calling up Microsoft and saying, "Hello, could you please upgrade all of our Windows 7 machines to Windows 8? Thanks, bye." We did it. We didn't do all the branches at once, but we just said, "Okay, let's do this branch for tomorrow." It came in the morning, and it was completely upgraded. In terms of customization, I've learned that every library is different. Each one has different groups of customers they serve, different ways of authenticating patrons, different reservation policies, and completely different cultures in some cases. A lot of times when I show Groovix to a library and talk about customization, they say, "Oh, the defaults will just be fine. We'll stick with, you know, whatever you have." But inevitably, as they start to look at it in depth or use it, they ask for changes. So here's another example from the North Central Regional Library System in Washington. They use a pretty standard time quota approach, but one branch has a unique time usage policy that they couldn't accommodate with their previous closed source system. The director at that branch is insistent on having rigid 30-minute time blocks starting at every half hour. They actually used to have like a board with formica tiles, and that's how they manage the time. So if you come in at 10:25 a.m., you get the computer until 10:30. I'm not a big fan of that system personally, but we were able to accommodate them with Groovix. We customized it and made it work and even put in overrides if they want to be merciful and let someone use it a little longer. And the screenshot you see here is from Brian's library, Somerset County. They wanted to do away with barcode-based authentication to make it easier on customers so they didn't have to type in a 20-digit barcode. But they still wanted to have time quotas and reservations for when things got busy. Right after the hurricane, they had a huge influx of people. So we developed a custom system to operate just how they wanted, down to the colors, the font. They're very particular about the login screen, and we were able to accommodate them. So I'd like to get a little feedback from the audience, and can reward you with penguins so you can have a penguin on your desktop. And I was actually going to throw them out to the audience, but my lawyer said, no, you'll get sued. So I said, no, I've got a better solution. Now it's completely safe, the parachute. But if I could get a volunteer, are there any... Does anyone have any feedback as to the types of things you would like to change on your public computers, if you could? Get a penguin. Okay. And, okay, so, and what do you use now for your print management?
Okay. What happens is it drops the screen behind whatever you're choosing to print. You have to go behind that.
Sure. So with closed source software, if the vendor won't accommodate you for a reasonable fee, if at all, then you're pretty much stuck. But with open source software, you have lots of options. You can change it yourself. You all program in your spare time, right? Everyone? Okay, great. So how many of you program in C? No. Okay. How many in Perl? Perl. All right. And how many in Python?
Wow.
All right. Is there anyone else? Okay. So, no, you're probably not going to start changing the software yourself. However, you can hire someone, any programmer, to change it. Are you going to do that? You're going to like put out a job listing, like need a programmer to change one function? No, you're probably not going to hire someone yourself to start changing code very often. However, you usually don't have to. That's because if a feature is useful, another user somewhere in the world with coding skills or the resources to hire someone will probably make the change. But with closed source software, you're probably only going to get a feature if the company thinks it will be profitable. So Groovix was built from the ground up specifically for public computing. Operating systems like Windows were built for personal computing. They assume most of the time there's one user using the computer day after day, and that assumption has really influenced the way Windows software works. Now, you can shoehorn in some utilities to turn Windows into a public computing platform, but it's very awkward because it's closed source and it isn't easy to automate and customize. I've talked to numerous libraries that said their settings were being changed despite using Windows Steady State. Now, Microsoft wrote the operating system. They have access to their own source code. You'd think they'd be able to automate and customize their own software. But once again, I think they made too many assumptions for personal computing instead of public. Another problem with Windows is that you don't have very fine-grained controls. You might be able to stop some unwanted behaviors, but in the process, you prevent people from getting real work done. One library had so many problems with Windows and USB drives and Windows asking to install drivers, they ended up giving up and encouraged people to use floppy disks. And this was only like 5 years ago. I just convinced them within the past year to eliminate floppy support at all. So here's another example. Some libraries prevent patrons from changing their computers with a product called Deep Freeze. But in that case, you need to wait for a reboot after every user for the machine to reset itself. And in addition, updating the machines becomes a hassle. Another example, I went to the internet room in the exhibit hall yesterday, and they have their computers set up using Windows and a product called Site Kiosk. And without doing anything tricky, I was able to bring up the network configuration and could have changed it from a public network to a home network, which reduces the network security level. So instead of a software house of cards made by different companies, Groovix was built from the ground up specifically for public computing. In between users, we reset the machine in a matter of seconds. You can centrally manage all of your computer's configurations, and you can automate everything. And it is a complete public computing solution. It's truly free software. You can download, modify it, use it for free. However, most libraries choose to pay us for support and customization, and we can take care of everything except hardware and network troubleshooting that you have to do locally. We figure out exactly how you would like your public computers to operate, and we create a custom disk for you. You pop it into each machine, your DVD or USB. You start the installer, and you're done. If you need changes, you can call us up and say, we got a new printer at this branch, and at the next reboot, they'll pick it up. In a lot of cases, we don't even have to reboot. We can push it out in the middle of the day. And we just, in the case of printers, we just need someone on site to look at the test print, make sure it came out. So, we need to work with you because there's a lot of things that need to be tested locally. So Groovix has authentication with your ILS, a guest pass system for unauthenticated use, time management with daily, weekly, monthly quotas by machine or user. There are reservations that can be self-made or by staff. We have content filtering if you need it for kids stations or qualifying for certain programs. We have print management, central configuration management, and the security is built right in. Most importantly, the machines are kept updated automatically. I don't use Windows much, but it's my understanding in Windows, if you want to be sure that every piece of software on your computer is up to date, you have to figure out every piece of software installed and check each one of them individually. So far, you're hearing all these great things about Linux and open source. But, of course, there must be some downsides, or else everyone would already be using it. One reason people are afraid of using Linux is because it's not popular. Now, here's a chart showing the operating system market share based on web browsing data. So, can I have a volunteer for a quiz question? All right. Okay, so what percentage of market share do you think Linux has? And I'll make it easy. It's multiple choice. 61%, 17%, 16%, 3%, 1.5%, or 0.5%. Which do you think it is? 1.5. Wrong, but you still get a penny. Okay, anyone else? What's that? Half a point? Wrong, but you still get a penny. Wrong, but you still get a penguin. No deployment. You want a periscope. Okay, anyone else? In the back.
Are you using Android and Mac?
Yes, all Linux-based operating systems. Sorry. Okay. But come up and get a penguin afterwards, anyways. Okay, the answer is 17%, the second category there. So, while Linux is probably the operating system of the future, for now, it's still the underdog to Windows 61% and falling. So, there are a handful of sites out there that will only work with Windows or Internet Explorer, but they're quickly becoming obsolete. For now, sometimes we can trick those sites and change the user agent string in the browser so that Firefox on Linux reports itself as IE on Windows 7, and the site works just fine. They had a restriction in there for no good reason. Other times, sites might use some obsolete proprietary formats like Silverlight instead of HTML5. I think there are still some sites using Shockwave, not Shockwave Flash, but actual Shockwave. And we can support Silverlight. We've even done Shockwave in the past. But those sites often cause problems and generate support calls. So another issue you run into, because Linux is an underdog, is hardware support. You can get Linux-certified hardware from Dell, HP, etc., but most miles are only sold with Windows. And if hardware is not sold with Linux pre-installed, you have to test it first before you go out and buy your entire fleet of computers. I'd say 90% of the PCs will run Linux out of the box without any issues. Another 10%, you'll need some expert support to get it running properly, maybe some new drivers. And in 10 years of doing this, I've only seen two computers that I couldn't get Linux to run well on. And the same goes for printers. As long as a printer supports PCL or PostScript, usually works perfectly, but there are some really cheap printers out there using non-standard languages that cause problems. HP these days, all of their cheap printers are using a proprietary HP plugin. It does work with open source, it's just a hassle. Another thing to be aware of, some computers now ship with BIOS settings that prevent you from running other operating systems. Chromeboxes and machines with UEFI often need BIOS configuration changes before you can boot Linux. So you can't just take it out of the box and stick your USB drive in and go. But it will work once you change the settings. So everyone loves change. Well, maybe not everyone. And Linux does have a learning curve. For the IT people, it can be a steep learning curve. But after you've gotten used to it, you have much more power and you can realize a lot of time savings.
Is Chris Phillips IT or frontline server?
IT.
Okay, of course he wasn't.
Right, right. And if you don't want to learn Linux, you can always pay for support. If you, as an IT person, though, if you take the time to learn Linux, it's a highly marketable skill these days, which can further your career. For the non-technical staff, for the frontline people, Linux environments do look a little bit different, but the concepts are all the same. And it's easier for patrons to adjust if they're going from Windows 7 to Groovix. That's easier than going from Windows 7 to Windows 8. We've tried to keep a pretty conservative approach to the desktop. We have the go button instead of the start button, but it's in the lower left-hand corner and traditional behavior because that's what people are used to when they walk into the library. They don't have a problem adjusting to it. Plus, because we're able to customize things, it makes a transition easier. If your library, you know, has a specific way of doing things, you might lose it in the transition from Windows 7 to Windows 8, but we can try and mimic that behavior. And as for the customers themselves, the feedback I get, usually people don't even know or they don't care that they've switched to Linux. I was at the Mead Public Library in Sheboygan right after they switched to Groovix, and someone said to me, "Wow, these computers are a lot faster now." That's the kind of feedback we get. So there are a handful of customers, sometimes very vocal ones, that will complain about a specific piece of software that's missing. And we can usually accommodate them. Sometimes, most of the time, the library won't want to because you're spending all sorts of resources for one user out of the entire library. And you can just never make everyone happy. And some people don't like the change, but the vast majority really enjoy the computers after they've switched. And the quotes up there, Lake County, I think I already mentioned, they reduced their support load 50%. Linux for everyone. So the Geneva Public Library in Alabama is a very small library on a very limited budget, and they have four public computers. And TechSoup for Library did a story on their transition from Windows to Ubuntu, and then they did another story when they transitioned from Ubuntu to Groovix. The library director, Marion Nguyen, also does all the IT work herself, and she's been running for several years now. So it doesn't matter how big or how small your library is, you can switch to Linux too. And how to get started today? You can buy a Chromebox, buy a Chromebook. There's a guest session mode. Chrome also they charge for the service, but they have a kind of a dashboard, configuration dashboard, where you can deploy changes to your Chromebooks, and you're running Linux. You can also download and try Ubuntu, and it also has a guest session mode that you can use in a public setting. Or you can grab a Groovix DVD or USB drive, which I've got here today, or you can download them from groovix.com/go.
So it's time for questions. Anybody have a question or a comment they'd like to? What we would ask you to do, because they're recording this, who knows why, but they are, please come up to the mic if you would.
I'm wondering about the digital literacy implications. You know, when I think about the average digital literacy trainer or the availability of digital literacy materials, I'm not seeing, you know, a lot of Linux capability there.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you agree? And if so, what do you think we can do about that?
If I could jump in first and then Angela, one of the issues that I've tried very hard to get staff on board with is that I'm not sure you're doing anybody a favor when you're training somebody to a specific software package, unless you're talking about something, a high-end graphics package. But what people really should learn how to do is spreadsheeting or word processing, because the concepts cascade across every office suite. But oftentimes what I've seen us do is to train somebody on a specific software package like Excel 2007. And I think you're locking them in. Angela?
I actually would agree. We teach in all three. We support all three. Because there are comfort levels. So some people have used Windows for ever and a day, and that's what they're comfortable with. And to Mike's point, you're never going to turn them around. What you can do is show them in the OpenOffice and LibreOffice what the similar functionalities are. And there are some basic methodologies that in designing the open source, the LibreOffice, or in designing Microsoft Word, you go to file to do something, you go to edit to do this, you go to view to do this, you go to format. Those are pretty synonymous across all of the software packages, even going into iOS as well. So if they understand those concepts, they can transition between the different approaches. The biggest challenge I see is either A, in comfort level. For an office staff or an office environment, it's also speed. To Brian's point, there are some packages that just can't do the same. I mean, you can't get the same thing out of Illustrator or some of the high-end packages. So it depends on really familiarity, speed, again, how fast you want something to happen. What we got were a lot of complaints from some of our staff who were using a Linux box. I can't do this as fast. I have to do this and this. And depending on their role and what they do, we might say okay, but on a whole, there are a great number of people in the staff who don't need to move at the same pace, or who they can take the extra leap and learn something a little bit different. To your point about what are we teaching, I guess the customers sort of, that we have people on our IT staff who can help the customers become acclimated to LibreOffice. In terms of schools and in terms of what they're teaching, there are several STEM programs now where people are teaching C++ and Lyric, going more towards programming and towards coding, not so that kids can do it, not that you'll have to do that with Linux, but to give people an affinity. I think what happened in our computing brain drain, as I'll call it, is in the late 80s and through the 90s, what we were all before that, they were doing heavy programming. You got C++, you've got the Python, you've got all these things going on, and then all of a sudden Windows comes out and everybody retreats to Windows. I've interviewed a ton of people and out for IT that all they know is Windows, and they won't get the job. Because that means you're only one side, and to me that tells you came up in the late 80s and through the 90s and you didn't learn some serious programming skills. So as we try to reverse that train as a country, I don't know if you've ever heard of code.org, they're trying to reverse some of the people's availability to look at coding and how they look at things without all the pretty flashing drag and drops. It's coming along. It's slow moving because, of course, everyone's the babies of the 80s and 90s are loving the Windows. But there is a literacy as a gap, and as a country, if we look at the coding and the push for STEM education, that literacy, I think, will catch up in the next 3 to 5 years.
Just to echo what they said, I think the general concepts are the most important. When you look at the market share data, regardless of which one's on top, these days there's a huge variety. You can't just teach to Microsoft Windows or just Mac. Everyone, they're using iPads and Android devices. So I think the general concepts are the most important.
At one time in a library I was in, we said to staff, if there's anything that you were doing in Windows that you can't do in LibreOffice, let us know, a work-related thing, let us know, and you get dinner for two at Tercicles. And it was a nice five-star restaurant. We never had to pay out on that challenge. Any other questions?
Can I go back for a second? I'm sorry, Brian. The one thing that can also help is if have someone on your staff or have someone who can actually make, to keep your arguments or your discussions to a minimum, have someone that can do that grid, very similar to what Brian's talking about. But if you're able to show someone, a customer, for instance, in Word you do it this way, here's how you would do it, it really takes someone being fluent because, as we know, when customers start or staff members begin to do work, They don't want to have a I don't know. They don't want to wait. They want it now. That's the microwave world we live in. We can't fix the microwave mentality, but we can get educated as a staff, and your staff can get educated on how to communicate what the translations are at every level of the different systems, the three different ones. I'm sorry.
Procedurally, do you change the default on LibreOffice to the Microsoft compatible formats?
We did in Somerset County. We made that the default because otherwise people have to think about it, but that's the default. So that you bring a document in Word, you work on it, and then you save it. It's going to be saved in Word
format. Are you a Debian derivative?
Yes, Debian, Ubuntu, and then we base on Ubuntu currently. That might change with the next release, but Debian-based.
Are you running your own repo?
We have our own repo for our packages. We are using the Ubuntu mirrors, but we plan on...
So you can still apt-get install something if you wanted it?
Yep. Most of our sites have their own local mirror as well for bandwidth.
Puppet? Yes, no?
No. We have... You could use Puppet with it, absolutely. We have our own system called Groovix Net Customization. It's a lot less overhead than Puppet. It would be nice to have a standard open source way of doing it. My hope is maybe Groovix Net Customization can become that standard in the future. It makes things very easy to automate. On my way traveling yesterday, a site got a new printer, and I was able to, with a couple commands on my phone, get them a new printer driver.
Outstanding. SIP2 support?
Yep.
To,
what is ours called? Bruce? Our ILS. Regarding authentication, I'm assuming you support NSIP 2.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just all of that.
All yep.
Right, those are my.
I have a question also. You mentioned as a replacement for EnvisionWare, because a lot of libraries use EnvisionWare products. What about the proprietary parts of using EnvisionWare, like print fee stations and e-commerce and that kind of stuff? Do you have a way that people could actually have to pay for printing and capture those jobs and not release the print jobs until they put money on the card or that kind of thing?
Right. Okay, so at the moment, we have our own print management solution. It does not handle the money, however. For libraries that need money handling with the print management, we've currently got a couple of Groovix customers using something called Papercut. However, I've just started to work with JMX on some Coinbox support, so we will be supporting physical money handling.
When you'll have Coinbox support.
Exactly.
Like 6 months horizon.
Hopefully three, yep.
You also mentioned heterogeneous environments where it's mostly Linux desktops, but there's some Macs there, there's some Windows. So how do you handle things like time management and reservations and that kind of thing in a poly-platform environment?
It's a good question. That issue has surfaced. We haven't had a library actually in that situation yet. So when that happens, we'll have to come up with a solution. In terms of printing, that is pretty easy to do across systems. We can send jobs over to other companies' closed-source print management systems, and they should be able to send over to ours. But reservations could be an issue.
One last printing-related question. What about like cloud-based printing for people who bring in their wireless devices, their laptops, their Androids, that kind of thing?
Sure. We have an IPP print queue, so it doesn't matter where it's coming from. There are various ways to print to an IPP print queue from Windows, Mac, Android, iPad, whatever, and then it just goes into the release system, and the staff can release it from there.
And you said it's free to try, support was possible to buy. Is the pricing model based on number of seats, number of desktops, number of questions, number of hours?
It's based completely on the number of computers that it's running on and what features you need. There's the base model, and then if you need things like authentication and reservations, that adds to the cost. All of our pricing is upfront and available on Groovix.com.
Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, stats, like how many people have been using our stuff?
Sure. Time usage stats we've had for a long time, and Brian's library was the first one to ask for printing stats as well, so we added that last year. You can get printing stats. And here's another example of customization. They were having problems where at the end of the day, the amount of money that it said should have been collected wasn't matching what was in the till. So we started doing hourly and daily print statistics for them as well.
Okay, I have a non-technical question. So often the feeling is, you know, open source software is not as powerful as proprietary software. We have a very active career resource center in our library with scanning software that we've purchased with OCR. So if I were to go back and talk to the older librarian who's in charge of this area and say, you know, this would, if we did this switch, her concerns are going to be, you know, we've paid for this software. How's that going to work? Is it still compatible? So are pretty much anything we've got, if we've paid for it already, is that something that we can still use? Or
it really depends on the specific thing. A lot of times, you know, libraries already have their printers, and Brian's library doesn't have the newest, best printers, but we work with them. So, you know, it depends on that exact scanner model.
Tricks.
And yeah, it's just on a case-by-case basis.
I'd like to also offer to you one thing is if you're trying to convert over, what you could do is do a test and try it out. A lot of what happens in is expectation level. And it goes back that someone is accustomed to something, and they may be able to find the exact same thing through the open source. It may be they have to take extra steps or less steps. But I think that it's involving that person. This is a non-technical answer to you. But it's the change management of how you change staff and how do you manage that change. And so you can easily do a test, bring in a pilot program, so that way they're not letting go totally of what they have currently. Get their buy-in, get their input collaboratively, you know, get some changes, and then roll it out, you know, increments a little slower. But where I see a big change is when people have actually demanded you must use this, or they shut something off and they shut something on. There's a human factor that's associated with using the computer. It's not just the box. And so it's change management, and how do you get someone accustomed to the change, and how do you elicit their feedback and their input in that process? And while the first round may not be as receptive as you would like, maybe the future rounds would be. But it's also, in terms of work productivity, I know in our environment there are some applications that our graphics design team uses that it would take a great deal of time for them to find something at this juncture in the open source of what list of software is available. Not to say it won't be in the future, but right now, for the amount of workload they have, we have maintained an iOS environment for them. But if we were going to convert over for some different areas, we would get their input. And there are some things that, you know, that I think Brian said, the graphics is, it's hard right at this juncture. What we really need are some power programmers to come back and build something that's even better.
But as far as public stations, we haven't had any issues.
Mm-mm. I think it's just an education. If it's public, I think it's education to the public. And as an entity, you're offering something that's for the customers, something they may or may not have at home. And if they don't have it there and you're offering it where you are, I think then it's a PR campaign to talk about why this is better and what it's able to do.
One thing that happens a lot of times, there'll be a very specific app that a library say, oh, and we need this app. People use it. They rely on it. And then they maybe switch over a portion of their machines without that app, and they find, oh, I guess no one uses it. And you might have spent thousands on some proprietary scanning solution, And we might find with a $200 HP multifunction unit, some of which support network scanning, and there's free OCR software, we did that for one library, it might replace what you have.
Two quick questions. Back on stats gathering, is that cross-platform available, or?
For print management, it would be, but the time usage stats, Groovix is all Linux, our software only runs on Linux, so all the stats would just be for the Groovix systems.
Okay. And the other one, is dual boot still available for classroom situations?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Two questions. One's a follow-up to something that the other fellows asked earlier. You had talked about that you do have the time management element built in for the public stations, and that the print managing was set up without payment. We're currently running, I believe it's the Comprise software, the SAM print manager, and that handles our both the time management and the paid printing, has the SIP2 link so that it can talk to our library database. So it sounds like all of the things that would be showstoppers for our ability to go back and kind of sell this to our folks would be the ability to pay. Is there any thinking about a kind of a one-stop management component to your Linux option here, or is that just something that y'all aren't looking into to do for the payment management?
No, it should only be a couple of months before we have a coin-op box. How do you collect the money now with SAM?
I'm sorry, I didn't mention that we're not using like coin boxes. They're actually taking it up like at the front station where folks pay for their fines and things.
Oh.
And they add it to the SAM front end there, and then the patron has access. You know, if it were something that... Yeah, that's just kind of the way it's being handled right now. It's manual right now through Comprise.
Okay, so the way Groovix print management currently works, people hit print on their station. Optionally, they get, as Angela mentioned, they get a dialogue saying, you're about to print 50 pages at 10 cents a page. It's going to cost you $5. They hit OK. Then it goes over to the print queue. They walk up to the desk. Staff sees a list of print jobs. $5, please. They get the money. They hit print. That's how it currently works. That's what SCLS is using and a lot of other libraries. The only thing we don't have is the ability for, you know, some sort of stored value notion. And we've actually talked about, we have the ability through SIP, we could put a fine on the library card itself. Every time you print, 10 cents, fine. But there are some other issues with that, including the accounting department. Apparently wouldn't like it. But even coin box support and probably credit card within the next 3 months.
Okay. Is that kind of detailed on your Groovix page or no?
I'll have to check. Okay. There is a page about print management, but it's pretty sparse.
Okay.
I'd be happy to talk in depth and give a demo. The demo that we hand out doesn't have all of the server-side components because that really needs to be set up on a case-by-case basis. But we can do a live screen share and show all of the server-side components as well.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I got to say, when we got rid of... I don't want to say EnvisionWare out loud, but when we got rid of that and the coin boxes, there was rejoicing among the staff. Those things were such a hassle. And it's just easier now.
So you're not collecting money at all, or did I misunderstand?
Okay,
through that.
Right,
okay.
But we're not using coin boxes and dollar bill changers.
Okay. So basically it sounds like it's already set to do very similar.
We're very happy.
And now can it send back to remotes, not the right, but to local printers? If there's multiple printers set up around the shop, once they release the job and pay for it, it can send back to the printer next to printers in like the small area where they're working, so there can be multiple printers on the network that way?
The way it's currently set up, the user chooses the destination.
Okay.
So the user could decide, I'm going to print it to that printer right there, and then when the staff releases it, it goes there.
Okay, great. And then the very last question I had was unrelated to that, but if I heard correctly towards the beginning, it sounds like you have an ARM distribution for this as well. It runs on a Pi?
I'm sorry?
It sounds like you've got a regular Linux distribution and an ARM processor distribution for your Groovix. Will it run on the Pi?
Groovix, we have not made an ARM version. Probably will sometime in the next year. But what Brian's done with Raspberry Pi is completely separate of Groovix.
Okay. I heard somebody say that they were running their catalog on it.
We do. Well, it's a catalog workstation. Okay. So if a customer comes up to use our catalog, it's a Raspberry Pi.
But you're not running the Groovix. You're just running...
No, we're running... It's Raspbian.
Raspbian?
Yeah.
Raspbian? Okay.
Raspbian.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Got a couple of questions regarding patron automation. A lot of our services are done from the patron end, and there's very little staff interaction with the patrons, such as the print management. There's public print release stations. Are those available through Groovix?
So that's what we're working on, the ability to put in coins or credit card and get the print yourself. Right now, you'd have to have the staff take the money and hit the print button.
Okay. And regarding that, the exchange of money, is there potential to have where a public patron could put in money into the print release station prior to printing and build up an account where it then deducts from the account, either from the ILS or a separate database?
Sure. Like I said, we still need to add the self-pay, but actually we do a little bit of that. Now, some libraries decide they're going to give people two free pages a day. So when they go to print, they print five pages. When the staff goes to release it, they see that they only have to pay for three. So once we have the coin box, then they'll also there's also the option for stored value.
And the money thing's a real bugaboo for our system. And we're on Circe Dynex. They have a deposit account feature where you, by SIP2, they could put money on their library account in advance and either pay their fines or the print jobs or whatever, and it's all through NSIP or SIP2. But, yeah, we actually hate coin boxes. You're handling money, they break, they have to be restocked, they get full, the coins jam, people put gum in them, you know. So something more like PayPal or Bitcoin, I mean, is really the way to go, I think,
right,
in the future. I don't think coin boxes have a long future. But right now we have a lot. They're like $2,000 each. I mean, it's just unreal that the thing would ever pay for itself, 15 cents at a time.
Exactly. That's I know that's why the Howard County Library system isn't doing
that. Yeah, it's actually cheaper to either just sell the paper by the sheet or give free printing.
Give it away. Well, embarrassingly enough, I misspelled HTTP on the screen. But you all automatically corrected for that. If you're interested in our, it's not just the slide presentation, but also any of the resources that we mentioned. You'll find a resource sheet at that URL. Just leave out the extra T. And then you did notice that it said text PIME. And what we thought we'd do is the fifth person who texted us that is going to win this. So I'll announce that phone number in just a moment. Were there any other questions or comments? All right, so counting up from the bottom, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's a phone number ending in 2387.
Yes.
A lucky winner. Very good. Thank you very much.